You know, it's always an honor and privilege when members of the U.S. military, whether active duty or veterans, agree to come on the show, because I think we all can learn so much from each and every one of them. Things like becoming a better leader, becoming more resilient, learning how to overcome obstacles personally and professionally, developing the proper mindset for success, and so much more. My next guest is Boyd Renner. Now, years ago, Boyd went into a Navy recruiting office here in Colorado with one dream on his mind. And that was to become a U.S. Navy SEAL. Now, you would think his recruiter would have encouraged him, but instead, his recruiter mocked him and said, "Son, you're way too small. You're not big enough to become a SEAL. It's never going to happen. It's a pipe dream. Forget about it." Well, thank God Boyd didn't listen to that shit, didn't forget about it, and instead used those words to fuel his passion to become a U.S. Navy SEAL, and he did. And then he went on to become a member of the legendary SEAL Team 6 community, where he served with distinction and honor until his retirement. Highly decorated, highly respected, I had the privilege of speaking with Boyd Renner at Conclave of Warriors in December and listening to his amazing keynote speech. This guy is amazing. You are going to love Boyd Renner next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. Patrick here. We continue to grow because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much. A big shout out to our brave men and women out there who serve us every day in the criminal justice field and in the U.S. military. Brave souls, each and every one of you. Thank you so much for heeding the call, doing what most cannot. Please remember, you are honored, you are cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the fantastic work. Want to give a big shout out to our partner and sponsor, Detecticam. This amazing company is helping keep the people who protect us every day safer by offering mobile threat detection available for the palm of your hand, detecting illicit drugs, explosives. You gotta have this technology, folks. If you don't have it, head over to the website, check out the link to Detecticam. Let them help keep your troops safer. If you are in charge of your agency's extra duty program, and like many things, you are just trying to keep up with every assignment, every project that you got going on top of the management of the extra duty program, let me tell you about my friends at Extra Duty Solutions. Extra Duty Solutions helps law enforcement agencies everywhere add efficiency and effectiveness to their extra duty programs. They can help with things like client interaction, scheduling, invoicing, collections, officer payments, feedback, problem resolution, and so much more. Best of all, their services are provided at no cost to the department and minimal cost to the clients, and their programs can be customized to meet the goals and unique needs of any agency. If that sounds good to you, and I know it does, because I wish I had this service when I was a commander and I was managing my extra duty program, head over to extradutysolutions.com. That's extradutysolutions.com. Let them help you with your agency's extra duty program and tell them Patrick from CJ Evolution sent you. On to the show with the one and only Boyd Renner. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. So excited to have my next guest on the show. I had the honor and privilege of meeting Boyd Renner down in Fort Lauderdale at Conclave, and he is just an amazing guy with an amazing background. Boyd, are you there, sir?
I'm here, my friend. Thank you for having me. And again, it was a pleasure meeting you down there. I knew instantly that we shared the same language, so that's why I came right up to you to say hi.
Oh, I appreciate it, sir. And again, honor to have met you. And Boyd, I gave an intro at the beginning of the show, but for anybody out there who wants to know who Boyd Renner is, a little bit more detail than I gave, can you tell us about yourself, sir?
Well, that intro you gave certainly made me so a hell of a lot taller than I am in real life. So, no, in all seriousness, it's, you know, I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. I was in one stoplight town in Colorado. I'd never seen the ocean. And it was either go to a low school with a C-plus average or join the Navy. And when I was there at the Navy, I decided that, hey, that SEAL stuff that I just saw in this brochure looks a lot better than being on a ship. So, you know, I tried and I made it and I ended up sticking with it for the next 28 years. But what I want everyone to know is that, you know, I'm the same as you guys. You know, everyone has their own struggles. They have their own things they're concerned about. They have issues at home. So I'm no different than any of you. And if you try hard enough, you'll make it. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, I'd say, again, thank you for your honorable service, sir. I mean, 23 years, Naval Special Warfare Development Group. And for those people who don't know out there, DevGru is SEAL Team 6. And you have done, can you talk a little bit about your career? I mean, highly decorated. Talk about how you kind of rose up to the ranks, Boyd.
Well, I joined the Navy, like I said, 88, one stoplight town. I guess the most important story for the early part of my career is I remember getting to the, you know, getting a bud, SEAL training. Mm-hmm. I remember jumping in the water, and I was like, and I remember that afternoon, you know, back then we had to use a payphone. So I got in line and I called my dad and I said, Dad, why is the water so freaking salty? Because I've never been in the ocean before. And he's like, well, it's the ocean, you dumbass. So 120 of us started, only 16 of us finished. And right after that, I went to jump school. And after jump school, they sent me to SEAL Team 2, where I, you know, I jumped in and did a platoon out to the Mediterranean. I volunteered for every course you could think of, whether it be sniper or climbing or communicator. And then my second platoon, back then we specialized, the SEAL team specialized in certain things, and SEAL Team 2 did winter warfare. So I did a winter warfare platoon where you deploy over to Europe. Back then we had a thing called the Cold War that they were preparing us for. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming back and hearing about this other unit that I had never heard of before, and it was called Naval Special Warfare Development Group. And I realized very quickly that all the guys from the best guys from the SEAL teams on the East Coast where I was were trying out and going to this place. So I dug a little deeper and I volunteered and I got selected and I went there in 1994. You know, obviously the training was much harder and I was the youngest guy there. I ended up making it through our selection and spent the next 23 years of my career at that unit. And, what's interesting about that portion of my life, everyone thinks that these movies and these TVs are these SEALs, you know, every other day going on this high-risk mission. Well, from 1994 to 2001, we didn't do shit, to be honest with you. We trained really hard and, you know, for the inevitable, but back then we didn't do a whole lot. We didn't have a lot going on. We had some, you know, we had Mogadishu, we had Grenada, we had some stuff going on in Panama, you know, before my time. But honestly, we just trained our ass off. And then when 2001 happened, my life changed. And then from 2001 to 2016, when I finally retired, I ended up doing 10 deployments to Afghanistan. I did 2 deployments to Iraq and 1 to Somalia just since 9/11. Mm-hmm. So obviously, the second half of my career is a different chapter than the first part of my career, but both are significant in their own way.
Wow. And you were, and I heard, Boyd, you spent the most time in DevGru than any other team member, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's because I was stubborn or they were too embarrassed to kick me out. I don't know what that was, but it was just good timing. So, yeah, when I left, I had the most time. I'm not sure if that's accurate anymore. There's a couple buddies of mine, I think, that hung out a little longer. But when I left, I was, and it was an honor they kept me that long. And, yeah. But with that, you know, you get pretty institutionalized. And I remember when I retired, you know, I got escorted out by a security guard. That door, you know, I held the door open for myself, and then he took my badge, and the door shut behind me, and that was it.
Yeah.
No fanfare, and I didn't have a badge to get in that building anymore. So it doesn't matter how long you're there. The mission's more important than the individual.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm sure you get this a lot. We talk a little bit about off the air. Is a listener out there, you know, somebody who wants to join the Navy and wants to be or try to become a Navy SEAL, what advice would you give them, Boyd?
Well, they really got to want it, and they got to want it for the right reasons. In my experience, is a lot of people want it because of what they've read or what they've seen. Well, that is not accurate at all. You know, it's really hard. It's hard on yourself. It's hard on your family. It's hard on kids if you have them. It's a big sacrifice, both for your mental state, your body, and, you know, different career options you might have, depending on your education level and whatnot. But if you really want it, if that's what you want to do, is serve your country, no matter in what capacity, whether that's a SEAL or a Ranger or, you know, a firefighter or a police officer, if you really want to serve, then do it. You know, and go all in. Don't go all in because you saw a cool movie on and you think the chicks dig SEALs, you know, because trust me, not all, they always don't sometimes. So you really gotta want it. And that's, you just got to do it for right reasons and make a list. Like, why do I want to be a SEAL? And if it's because it looks cool on a movie, then you're choosing the wrong profession.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you that, because I know, like, there's a lot of, you know, being in law enforcement for, you know, over two decades, I look at some of these movies and you know, that are out, and it seems like every other television show is some cop show. And it's not really the way it's not portrayed, you know, it's not like that in real life is what I'm trying to say. And I imagine, you know, are the SEALs accurately portrayed in movies? You know, I mean, because they only show the action, and I get that it's Hollywood, but there's probably a lot of downtime, right?
Yeah, I think downtime is more. I mean, the only movie that I can really compare it to what I did, which I felt was fairly accurate, was Lone Survivor. Mm-hmm. And that's because I was up there searching for Marcus Luttrell. And you know what they didn't show in that movie, though? They didn't show the fact that I had to carry 20 of my buddies' bodies up a 2,000-foot ravine so they could have a gravesite when they got home. They didn't portray that. They just portrayed all this other stuff, you know. So after we recovered all these guys that we lost, we got told to go look for the four guys we were missing. And so I spent the next 4 or 5 days searching for those guys, Marcus Luttrell, and we didn't know the other three were already dead. But what you need to keep in mind is that wasn't portrayed in the movie. And what wasn't also portrayed in the movie is the fact my wife had no idea if I was on that helicopter or not, because I just went off the net for 10 days. Yeah. And, you know, luckily my brother was a SEAL also. He was able to, you know, let her know that I was not, in fact, on that helicopter. But so my very long answer to your short question is absolutely not portrayed in the way that what really happens in my experience downrange. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that some of the scenes and some of the emotion and some of the, you know, the experiences are not accurate, but overall, I would argue that, you know, those things that I mentioned, you are never shown, because they just don't sell. They don't sell tickets at the box office, which you very well know in being a police officer.
Yeah, yeah. Now let's shift a little bit, brother, and let's talk about, you know, adversity for a moment. I mean, you've faced and overcome some of the toughest military training in the world that, you just, you know, said, you know, you just talked about just horrible circumstances where you had to go fall, you know, look for your fallen brothers. And what advice would you give somebody out there, again, law enforcement, military, someone who, on, you know, how can they overcome? I'm sure there's a bunch of different tips you can give, but adversity. I mean, how did you get past the difficult times in your life?
Well, you're a police officer. You've seen things you want to forget. And every police officer out there or firefighter that's listening, they've seen things they want to forget, whether it's an experience on the job or otherwise. But what I've learned is that you have to sort of man up and seek out someone that's familiar with your tribe. And by tribe, I mean someone that's familiar with where you became institutionalized. And so if you're a firefighter or a cop or a military guy, you need to seek out a trusted agent in that tribe. And if you haven't read a book called The Tribe, you should, by Sebastian Younger. It'll help a lot of people out there that are kind of finding their way. But you got to seek out that trusted agent, and you got to lift your skirt a little bit and talk to them, and you got to let them know what's bothering you. Because if you don't, if you compartmentalize it, the next person you're going to be talking to is Maker's Mark, or worse, your own, or looking at, you know, Smith and Wesson pistol. And I say that in a way that people will be like, oh, how could he talk about suicide like that? But I'm afraid sometimes when you don't seek out your tribe, those are the two options that the people have left. And sometimes it's easier to drink, and at other times it's easier just not to think about it. And that was the latter of the two options that I told you. And I've seen both in my community, and I know you have as well in yours. And I know the firefighters out there have seen also. So in short, just man up, be a good dad, be a good husband, and seek out those that might understand what you're going through. Because if you don't, your options are way less. That's my one paragraph advice.
Yeah, and it's such great advice, brother. And I'm with you. I think you got to seek out the help. You can't look at it as a sign of weakness. I think in the first responder community, I think a lot of people still have that mindset that, well, you know, if I tell, or, you know, ask somebody for help or advice or whatever, counsel, then it's showing a sign of weakness. And maybe it's like that. I know it was like that in the military when I was in there a long time ago. But it really is strength. And I really do believe that you're a product of who you surround yourself with, right?
Yeah. Not only you're a product of who you surround yourself with, but you're a product of what you surround with. Mm-hmm. So if you surround yourself with options that are good for yourself, whether it be school, whether it be, gym membership, whether it be, listen to a good podcast on the way to work instead of the radio, whether it's sitting down and reading a book instead of watching a crazy SEAL movie on TV, you got to be a product of what you do, not only of what you're with. And that's what I've learned over since 3 years since I've retired, is you just got to invest in yourself. And it's easier said than done. And I certainly didn't do it there for a while. But at one point in my life, I don't know what turned the trigger on me, but I'm like, you know what? The world's not going to come and hand me, contrary to what socialism believes, the world's not going to open their arms for you and just give you what you want. You got to kind of go out there and figure it out yourself. And for me, it was going to school. For me, it was hiring a keynote speaker coach. For me, it was hiring a physical trainer. For me, it was hiring a nutritionist. It was listening to podcasts instead of NFL.com on the way to work. I had to invest in myself. And every one of those things I did networks yourself and makes you part of that new tribe. And there's a transition there.
Yeah.
If you join a gym, those people aren't necessarily from your tribe, but if you stay there long enough, they will be, because then you start speaking their language. You start feeling part of a group and you start steering away from Maker's Mark and every other option that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So, that's another sort of long answer to your question, is just guys got to get out there and invest in themselves. And it's not easy. It freaking sucks. It's hard, but you got to do it, because no one's going to come give it to you.
Yeah, nothing in life becomes easy. You got to work for it, like you said. And just a hats off to you, Boyd. You just completed your master's degree in project management at Penn State, right?
I did. And, I'm incredibly fortunate. I have a wife that's a hell of a lot smarter than I am. And
I think my wife is smarter than me.
I think most of us are listening to the podcast are in the same boat. That's why we're listening, because our wives tell us to be smarter. But no, it's one of those examples where I got my undergrad on my fifth tour to Afghanistan online. And instead of just, saying being done with that, I was like, you know what? This is not that hard. So why don't I just start my master's? And I signed up to Penn State. I never had to pay a dime, because I busted my ass 24/7 trying to find scholarships out there, no matter how small. And I ended up getting paid for 100% by scholarship, just by writing a lot of essays, by making a lot of phone calls, doing a lot of interviews. But I invested in myself and I took the time to do it. Who knows if it'll ever pay off?
Yeah.
It
will.
I have it and I feel good about it. And I got a good looking diploma on the wall. Well, now I'm trying to figure out what I want to do next.
Well, congratulations to you.
Who knows what that's going to be, but I think I like this keynote speaking thing. So if any of you out there need a keynote talker, let me know. I'm at about 20% out of 100 in effectiveness at my talk, but I'm getting better.
Yeah.
And I kind of look forward to the future now, brother.
That's awesome, brother. Now let's shift to leadership a little bit. Navy SEALs are known for their exceptional leadership skills. What advice would you give the listener about how to become a better leadership development? Because I really do think, most people out there are leaders. Everybody could be a leader, right? At least that's what I believe. But what tips can you give them?
Well, the leadership skills that served me the best, and again, I had kind of sort of two careers. I had pre-9/11 and then I had post-9/11. So pre-9/11 is traditional, whiteboards, and you give your guidance and you follow up. But early on, when I first did my first deployment to Afghanistan in 2002, what I realized very quickly that leadership doesn't work in a stressful combat. And when I say combat, that's all encompassing towards police work, firefighter work, and my work. They're the same to me, because what cops deal with on a daily basis is far harder than what I had to deal with in the sense of public scrutiny and how they interpreted your job. So when I say combat, it goes for all three. So when you're in combat, the leadership's a lot different. So in my opinion, leadership, you have to trust the people around you the most, and you have to give them the rope to make decisions. Because if you don't, you're not going to be near them when they need to make a hard decision. And, you know, if you put the wrong person in that spot, whether it's a combat situation overseas or it's a combat situation in a dark alley or on the third floor of a fire, if you've based your leadership style around this person needs to come ask you for permission and make sure it's okay, then you've failed, because that person's going to, first, one, slow down his decision, and two, yeah, you can make the wrong one. So again, sort of the way that I look at leadership is different, is make sure you surround yourself with the right people. And that's a judgment call on the individual doing the selection. And then second, give them the leeway to make the decisions when you're not there.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, honestly, I've written hundreds of awards, you know, for people around me, you know, making me look good. And everyone said, man, that's great leadership. And I'm like, nah, not really. I just pick the right people and let them make decisions. That's, yeah, that's not that hard when you simplify it like that.
Yeah, and I love that. And I saw this in a career in law enforcement sometimes, where the people in charge were so worried that the people below were going to make a mistake and make them look bad. And that's not leadership. You have to let your people make mistakes, because that's how they're going to learn. But so many leaders, I think, are afraid of that. You know what I mean?
I'm not going to say anything that your listeners haven't heard, but if people don't learn from succeeding,
yeah,
that's easy.
Yeah.
You know, people learn because they make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, if you pick the right person, the mistakes they make, they'll learn from quickly. If you pick the wrong person, they're going to make more than one mistake, and that'd be a big one. So, you know, the biggest leadership skill is just, you know, trust your gut on that person. It's not always based on a resume. You know, a person's going to be highly qualified on a resume, but until you meet him face to face, and you know his character, and you know his morals and his ethics, then, and just go with your gut and say, hey, man, this guy doesn't have the school, but I'm going to bring him on board. So you got to trust your gut when you surround yourself with good people.
Yeah, I love that. That's great advice. Let's shift gears, brother. Let's talk about Endeavor Life Sciences. You're one of the co-founders in this company. Can you tell everybody, because this is an amazing company, when you were telling me about it in Fort Lauderdale, I was like, wow. Can you tell a listener what this company is, what do you do, and how did you come up with the idea?
Well, in full disclosure, I did not come up with this idea. My dear friend Patrick Duffy came up with this idea, and the story and how he did is profound and very sentimental. But I won't go into that. I'll let him share that. But and to summarize the macro overview of Endeavor Life Sciences is that the company, we have patented a way to safely encapsulate DNA that you can add to a new or existing tattoo. And everyone's like, well, why the fuck would I want that?
And,
it's, you know, I don't want to cuss, but that's the best language to use. Most people, that's what they're thinking in their mind. And so why I said it. But when you think about a tattoo, and I never had a single tattoo until this product came out. But when you think about a tattoo, people get it for not many reasons. One's sentimental, you know, one's inspiration, and one's, you know, maybe remembrance. And so when you think about the idea of taking a loved one, DNA, a physical element of what makes that person unique, and encapsulating it safely in a polymer that's used every day in science, and then add it to your tattoo, it adds another realm to that tattoo. And I'll share a quick story for your firefighters out there. There's two dear friends of mine, one of which I've lost. He had cancer up in New York. His name is Terry O'Hara. He's a detective. And then another good buddy of mine, the strongest man I know that's fighting cancer right now, another detective up in New York, Johnny Walker. And they were both diagnosed with cancer after being to day one at the Twin Towers. Mm-hmm. And so I met both these individuals, and I told them both about this product, and they were blown away for different reasons. At the time, Terry had cancer. And so what he wanted was all his wife and his kids' DNA in his tattoo. Before he went on his next journey, because at that time he kind of knew he was checking out. And so, of course, we did it, and we didn't talk about it with anyone. It wasn't a sort of an advertisement. But, and then the next individual, Johnny Walker, he wanted the same thing. He wanted all his kids' DNA and his wife's DNA and his tattoo. And he wanted it for a different reason, because he wanted it, their DNA and their tattoo, so that when he was getting his chemo and going to the surgeries, their DNA was with him fighting alongside him. And which I think is sort of what the company stands for. Obviously, those are both sombering events, and you know, Everence can be used for more motivating and inspirational events as well. whether it's a birth of a child, whether it's, you know, a marriage, whatever you might want to be, whatever inspires and motivates you, the technology is out there where we can encapsulate it and add it to your tattoo. It doesn't have to be in ink. You can just put it in your body if you want. And we can actually, as of late, we can add those items to jewelry, either a bracelet or a ring. And we can encapsulate cremated hair and ash as well, because a lot of people were asking for that. So yeah, if you're interested, you know, people get tattoos for their own reasons. If you want to add your loved ones as part of that tattoo, go check out the website. I'm going to have Patrick here put out a little code that if you want a discount, he can advertise that. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I ended up getting my first tattoo. My wife's DNA is in my leg tattoo. She's one of the strongest people on the planet. She has cystic fibrosis. Yeah. She's 52 years old, and her DNA is in a lung tattoo on my calf.
I think it's just an amazing business idea, amazing thing to do. And a little known, just for you folks that you know are listening out there, a little known quarterback by the name of Drew Brees loves Averence, and I think he has a bracelet that he wears, right?
Yeah, he's now a brand ambassador and somewhat of a partner of the company as well. He believed in it so much, he invested a little bit, and he does have his kids' DNA, his three kids. I believe it's three boys, maybe, and a fourth girl. I don't remember. But he was one of the first to get our custom-made bracelet with all the kids' DNA in that bracelet. And you can see that, you know, his picture on the website, Everence.life. And if you've never met the man or know his story, it's pretty powerful. He's a great man. He was, in fact, underestimated his whole life as well. And, yeah, it was good to have him on board.
Yeah, yeah. So what's next for Boyd? I know we talked about a lot of stuff. Anything else that you want to mention? I know you got your speaking. You're all over the place with that. You just finished school, had a decorated military career. What's next on the radar for you, bud?
Well, I'm looking, debating if I want to write a book, and I'd love your listeners' input.
Yeah.
So I either want to do a book that's nothing but funny stories that happen in combat, and I'll share a quick one. So when we were in Afghanistan looking for Marcus Luttrell, and I remember we're walking down this ridgeline, and I'm up in the point, I'm about 200 yards in front of my boys, me and the other sniper. And I hear this thing come across my radio. It's like, "Hey, Boyd, we got, someone's following us." I'm like, "Well, shit." So we jump off the trail. It's daytime. We're, you know, jump in the bushes, and we set up this modified sort of ambush looking thing. And, you know, we're laying there. We're stressed out. There's bad guys everywhere, obviously, because of the incident that just happened. And next thing you know, I hear this laughter coming down the line. I was like, "What the fuck?" And of course, I can't see anything. I'm laying on my stomach. All I hear is this laughter in my headset and down, you know, to my left. And so I get up on a knee and I'm looking around. And sure enough, I see two big ass monkeys, real monkeys, walking down the trail, like looking for us. Like, where the hell they go? So my first book idea is to just do stories like that from cover to cover of just funny shit that happens in combat.
Well, I can't imagine. I mean, you got to break up the tension and the stress, and I know that. But I can't imagine the stories you have just messing with other people too, and other team members, and playing jokes on each other. I mean, imagine you guys do that shit. It was like that when I was in the military in the Army, messing with each other all the time, playing pranks on each other.
So every unit out there has the guy, right, that's super anal about his gear. He's always looking perfect. Yeah. So, I mean, everyone has them. And so I remember we did this target in Iraq, and it was kind of shady. And, after all the bullets get done, and we're searching a place. And I remember it was nighttime. You know, all of our stuff was at nighttime. This buddy of mine, he's in front of me. He's that guy. he walks by me because he was, trying to meet up with his boys. And I'm like, "Good God, what's that smell?" Well, someone had sprayed his whole entire back with perfume. And they found in Target, and they'd hung panties, female Iraqi panties, all over his back. Like, he literally looked like Victoria's Secret walking through the helicopter. And then cheap perfume to go with it. I thought I was going to throw up, but I was laughing so hard it fogged up my night vision goggles. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, it was the best.
And then what did he do? He was probably all pissed off when he figured it out.
He had no idea until he got back. He started taking his shit off, and he smelled like this whorehouse. And so he totally blew up, which made it worse, because then they kept pranking him.
That just makes it worse.
Once you know it bothers you, you're done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, everyone that that's familiar with me knows this guy. I'm not going to get his name out because he's actually one of the hardest and best men I know, but he was not digging that night for sure. But anyway, so that's one idea. My other idea is just on my career and being underestimated my whole life from the time my Navy recruiter said I can't go to BUDS. And I'm also debating on just doing one with my three brothers, which we all served. We did 78 years together. Two of us were at the command together, and one of them was a special warfare boat driver, SWCC. And, you know, between us, we had about 10 Bronze Stars and a Purple Heart and some other medals. So, and I'm not saying that to brag. I just think it's cool. But those are my three ideas. And so to answer your question, I'm debating on just doing a sort of a good book, not a, hey, look at me type book, but more of a book on, hey, man, if you're from a 1,200 person town in Colorado and you want to be a SEAL, you can do it type book.
I love it, man. And I told you, whatever you choose, brother, I'm sure it's going to be a success. And whatever you choose, I would love to have you back on the show to talk about it when you're ready.
I'm standing by, my friend. You just give me the call.
Well, Boyd Renner, brother, if people want to reach out to you, how can they find you?
Well, sadly, and I say this in a sort of sad sense because I was always counter social media, but with Everence and Endeavor Life Sciences, I did create a social media account. BRenner350, I think, is my Instagram account. You can reach out, hit me up there, say hello. I follow your stuff. So anyway, like that, or they can go straight to you and they can email me directly from you because you have my email. So
yes.
Yep.
Well, Boyd Renner, it's an honor and privilege, brother. So good to talk to you again. Again, it was great meeting you down in Fort Lauderdale. I didn't see you out there doing PT. I mean, I was getting my ass kicked by Sawman down there.
Yeah, I was like, out there an Boyd? Hour. I was out there an hour before you.
Yeah, probably.
So, I knocked it out, and then I came back and had a big stack of pancakes. So I don't remember if that's accurate. But that's certainly going in my book for sure.
Well, Boyd Renner, anything we can do for you, brother, you have my contact information. Love to have you back on the show. Everything we talked about will be linked up in the show notes. Much success to you, my friend. Anything you need, please reach out to me.
Stay safe, Patrick. Take care, brother.
All right, brother.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.